Hello and welcome to our INE office hours for the month of September 2016. This is for the all people that are in any Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology practitioner trainings, not just the NEPT program, but the IRFPT program and also the CMDS, Clinical Mastery of Digestive System program. We get people coming and going when they come in from those programs, and while you're in the first 3 to 5 months of that program, you get access to these calls so you can share with the group and bring in cases and ask questions about things in the programs and anything else that you may want to find out about or get support on or get coaching on. So it's open to whatever's open for you. During the calls, we have a couple of ways that we can access each other. One is on the actual phone line. And I'm opening up the chat right now. And all you have to do to ask a question or make a comment is to press star 2 on your telephone keypad, and that'll open up your line. I'm taking a sip of water. Excuse me. Did you ever have one of those days where you just hit the ground running and you start working and you forget to eat or drink? That's what happened to me this morning. So when that happens, my throat gets real dry. So I'm back. So basically anything goes on these. I don't do full case analyses. We do those on our NEPT case study calls, and those are where someone will fill out a form and submit a full case and a whole bunch of labs, and those take a good half hour, 45 minutes, sometimes even an hour to do, and those are only done on our nutritional endocrinology case study calls. But what we do on these calls is you can ask a question about a case. So you've got a client, they have this particular lab, you're doing this protocol, you need help, and I can help you, and also the whole group can ask and support you as well. So it's star 2 on your telephone keypad. The other way is we have a chat going, and if you're on the web and you click through there, there's a little box underneath where you're listening, the little play button or whatever, and you can actually ask questions, and I can see them, and Lynn usually is on there checking them, and you can ask questions and we'll get them. The third way is if you in advance put them on one of the pages, the INE Office Hours Ask the Doctor Questions for Calls page, and that basically is a page that we check in advance, so we don't check that during the calls. We did check it this morning and there were nothing in there, so We're here in the present moment, and I'm excited to answer your questions, to hear what's going on for you, to hear some successes. I love to hear successes, and go from there. So we have two lines up, and E and K in Lowell, Massachusetts. That's how it shows up, E and K. Is that Susan?
No, it's Eric.
Oh, Eric. Hi. Okay, got it. Eric Reardon. All
right. That's right.
Gotcha.
You got it.
Hi, Eric. Okay.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Eric?
I'm good. Thank you. I've got two questions for you.
Sure.
One is about hypoglycemia and no food before bed. Do you still advocate somebody with hypoglycemia not to try to eat 3 hours before going to bed?
That's a great question, Eric. So it depends. A lot of my questions, my answers start with it depends, right? Ideally, we want to get them to the point where they can go longer. Clearly, there's a dysfunction if they can't. So I would say if it's someone who has gotten in the habit of eating something right before bed because that's the only way they can fall asleep or it keeps them from waking up, then you start there. And so you start with, okay, what are they eating right before bed? You want to avoid all carbs before bed because that's going to cause an insulin spike, and that can cause them to actually feel worse. Generally, I recommend something easy if they're going to do something like that, you know, if they can get away with a protein powder shake. Something that's easily gotten into the system, doesn't raise the insulin levels too much, and won't interfere with the sleep. So I would start with changing the quality of it, and you know how to do that because based on the program, you know what to do. But then I would start moving them back a little. So as you get them on, you know, supplementation and exercise and address all the other issues and address the actual food during the day, like carbs early in the day can contribute to a problem later in the evening, as we know. So I would just start inching them backwards. backwards, inching them backwards, and inching them backwards. Because what is hypoglycemia? It's on the spectrum of the whole insulin resistant diabetes spectrum. It's just real early on. And generally, insulin hypoglycemia, not always, but generally, it's caused by excess insulin being secreted. And what we want to do is still resensitize the cells to insulin and help them to be able to not produce quite so much insulin. That's not always the case, but that's usually what it is. It's this big mass of insulin, and then, boom, they crash. So the closer to bed they eat, the worse they may feel.
Okay. And in terms of supplements, it would be the same thing? Everything you're recommending for insulin resistance?
Yeah, and play around with it. Mm-hmm. Definitely the fatty acids in particular, and just play with it and see which ones work best for them. Okay, like for some people, chromium right before a meal, like they really have to titrate that because it can really bring their blood sugar down a lot more because it's helping the insulin, the sugar get into the cells more. It depends on the presentation, right? If this is a person who is extremely thin and wiry, then it's going to be hard to get them to eat less frequently. You just have to change what they're eating more frequently. They're going to need more fat. They probably are really fast metabolizer. They're burning stuff up.
Okay. All right. And the other question is about, I have somebody tracking their glucose levels, a very thin person, and I'm wondering, can a food sensitivity cause them to spike up high? So, for example, she eats eggs and greens in the morning, and her level is up to like 167 15 minutes after.
Yeah.
Whereas she has a protein drink and she's only at 140. One day she was at 129, 15 minutes after.
So this is somebody who's already diabetic then? I mean, given
those numbers. She's pre-diabetic. She's only she's like 105 fasting.
105 fasting. So she's getting huge spikes even on, you know, a protein shake to go from 105 to 140. That's a big spike. Okay. And she's
You're
real
saying
thin.
Ideally not above 110. You're saying that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
Never going above 110. Yeah.
Right. 140 is clearly way too high. You know, if it's 115,
in the beginning, she was going 175 in the very beginning on eggs and greens.
Wow.
So I'm wondering, can eggs or a food sensitivity cause somebody to spike higher?
It can, because food sensitivities create inflammatory reaction, which can create an alarm reaction, which can trigger the adrenals to then produce cortisol, which is going to go to gluconeogenesis to break down. The other thing is, I've never heard it with eggs, ever. I've heard it with dairy for sure, where it can, the proteins can actually be broken down. So here's what I'm thinking. Let me think about this. Is she a stress bunny? Is she under a lot of stress in general?
She's got a fair amount of stress. Not a great sleeper. And I'm working on that with her. But she's not overweight at all. She's actually very thin.
Very thin.
And she's been pre-diabetic for a while, 59 years old.
And has her diet been poor up till now, and now you're cleaning it up, or?
No, I wouldn't say poor, but it hasn't been great. I mean, you know, I am cleaning it up a little bit, but she's not a terrible eater by any means.
Yeah, so food sensitivities can, because of the creating a stress in the body. I would be looking at individually, like, so have her have a breakfast, and she may not go very long, but at least just do just the greens, like just do a green smoothie, do it with an avocado in it or something for extra fat.
Okay.
And then have her just do that and see if that raises it. So isolate whether it is the eggs.
Okay.
Right? Have the eggs separate. Just have a hard-boiled egg and not have the greens with it and see what happens and see if there's a difference between it. You know, it could be that she is converting the protein in the egg into sugar. There's a process called gluconeogenesis. The branched-chain amino acids can get converted into glucose.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if she's thin, maybe she's not eating enough. And that's causing it too. It's causing her body to start breaking down her tissue. So I'd really look at overall how much protein she's eating in a day. But also you want to look at, is there another stress in her system, right? Is there a gut bug? You know what I mean? Is there some sort of hidden stress that's causing that? are there any foods that don't cause her to go up that high? If she eats just a salad, I'd want to see what happens, right? What happens if she's just doing green leafy vegetables, a plate of broccoli with coconut oil on it or something, you know, or a handful of nuts, things that generally wouldn't raise it, your sugars. What's that doing? Maybe not cashews, because those do tend to have a little bit more sugar, but, you know, a handful of walnuts, for example. So I would just play around with individual foods with this person just to see if it is food sensitivity, or if even the foods, you know, like eat an avocado. Avocado should not make anybody's blood sugar go up, right? So just tell her to sit down and make herself a bowl of guacamole and just eat it with celery sticks and see what happens.
Okay.
Right? And that's, you know, just play with it and try to really tease out which foods are doing this with her.
Okay.
Okay.
And can I ask you, when you generally have people track, how often do you typically have them track their level?
Their glucose level?
Their finger and actually,
Well,
like after breakfast? Do you do it after lunch? Do you do it, like, how often?
Again, it depends. Right? It depends on the person, right? So if you look on the chart that I've given you and it lists it every 15 minutes, I usually have people do, if they can do all their meals for 3 days, but sometimes they won't. But I want to get as much of a variety of meals as possible.
Okay.
So I want them to have tested a breakfast, tested a lunch, and tested different ways. If, you know, some people are set in their ways. They have the same breakfast every day, and that's what they want to do, and that's fine. So you don't have to test it over and over. Although it is very telling to test it over and over, because we're also having them track their stress levels and their exercise levels and see if that is doing it. Is she exercising in the morning before she has her breakfast?
Not in the morning, no.
Okay. Right, because that can play into it as well. And that, you know, if somebody's over-exercising and they have adrenal fatigue, that can actually cause them to start, you know, breaking down their glycogen stores and shooting their sugars up.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, but generally you want to get, like, a different lunch and a dinner.
I want to get I love it when people, the best way is when people track all their meals for, like, 5 days straight. And that's not always reasonable, but if they, like, say they're at work and they're not going to track their lunch, but whatever they normally eat for lunch, eat it for dinner one day and see what it does at dinner. So you're just trying to get as wide a variety of the foods they're eating and see what's happening on their current diet before you start to swap things out, because it really does help to get them to do it. I don't always get people to do that because they've heard me speak about it and they've started to make changes, so I don't always get them at their worst. Which is fine if they're willing to make the changes without the proof. But I like to just see, what's your current diet doing for you, and just track it for 3 to 5 days.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And the thing I always tell people for breakfast is eat the whatever the highest carbohydrate breakfast that you would normally ever eat is. Eat it. Right? If once a week you have a bagel and cream cheese for breakfast, I want to test that. If most of the time you're eating a good breakfast, I want to see what's happening when you eat that bad stuff, because it's when you do that that could be creating this long-term problem.
Okay. All right. I got it. Thank you.
Sure. Did you have another question? It sounded like you started to ask another question.
No. Well, I mean, I could ask you a million questions, but I don't want to.
All right, we'll come back on if nobody else comes on, okay?
Okay, I will.
And feel free to post questions in the Facebook, because, you know, there's not just me that can answer, but people have been in for a while, and Lynn and all of us can support. So if you have unanswered questions, don't leave them unanswered. Please ask them.
Okay?
All
right, thank you. Yeah.
All right,
thank
you're welcome. So we have, you're showing up as Larry Beverly. Hello? Beverly? No? Oh, books, not. I'm reading the wrong name. No, it's not Beverly. It's Janet. Janet? No? Books. Who's books?
Hi.
Janet. Yeah, there you are. I'll just put my name. I was thinking, I saw Larry, and I know that Beverly often comes on and it says Larry, so I wasn't reading the last name. So, there we go.
I could do that today. That's fine. Hi. I purchased the Heart Mass Inner Balance unit to use for a couple of people that I have that are, you know, not thinking that they're stressing. And I tried it for myself first to see how it works. I was surprised because I thought that I was pretty good with not stressing, and this is the one that clips on the ear and attaches to your cell phone.
To your phone.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it took me a while to get in the 80 percentile. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. I thought I was pretty good at this. So I've never used it. I do love HeartMath, and, of course, Greg Braden, who really promotes it a great deal also. But I need some guidance with it. I you know, in suggesting this to people, they'll want to know how often I can use it, when should I use it, how. I know they should use it when they're feeling stressed. How do you chart progress with it other than just watching on the screen? I'm just not familiar with it, but I think it is going to be excellent.
It's a great tool. And it's a great tool for what you just said, Janet, right? Because we think we're doing it. Because a lot of times I'll watch people, I'll say, okay, let's just calm you down, just take some breaths, just do some appreciate, let's go to the beach, whatever. And they're like, part of the way through it, and I could still see the tension in their body, but they're done.
Uh-huh.
And so that shows me that they're not, you know, you're not practicing it initially with long enough periods to be able to feel it when you get there. Mm-hmm. Right? I've been doing this for years, and when I got my inner balance, I did it for a couple of days, and I just stopped doing it because I realized how I was in the right zone because I would do it, and I was like, whoa, I got there really quickly. So it was really good feedback, but I've been doing this for, like, I don't know, 8 years. So it does take time, but it's good feedback because you got the thing like, okay, maybe I'm not getting there as quickly as I thought I was. Maybe I just need to do this more often. So in terms of how often to use the thing, well, it depends how and what kind of job they have, right? Because you can set it to beep, and when you go and you can be focusing on the breathing, if you can do that while you're working and doing other things, you get the little feedback that goes, oh, I'm getting out of the zone. Oh, okay. You know, it's a good reminder. But if you're still in that really early stage, things are going to be beeping like crazy at you to tell you, and you may not get your work done, right? So I would say initially I'd have people set aside, you know, 5 minutes three times a day to just work with it and play with it and get a feel and get a feel. That's what we really want people to do, is get a feel from your body when you're really there, right? Because when you can see it's relating on the thing that's picking up your heart rate variability, and you get the feeling, you go, oh, that's the feeling. I thought it was this other thing, but it's really this. And the more you do it, the more you reinforce it, the less you're going to need it. Quite frankly, I carry the thing around with me and I hardly ever use it. So I wouldn't just do it when they're stressed. I would practice it when they're not stressed so they get the feel. So that if they do get stressed, they can turn it on and they can know when they get there. And after a while, you don't need the device because you just know when you get there because you get so in tuned with that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found with using it just a few times and that I wasn't where I wanted to be, that when I was a little stressed, I could just think it. I didn't have to use the ear clip.
Exactly. That's
and
what
I don't
I'm
know,
saying.
Yeah. I don't know where I went on the scale or the chart that it has, but I felt better. So it did trigger something
for me. And then you can reinforce that. So you feel it. You say, okay, I'm going to get this. Okay, I feel like I'm there now. Then you plug it in. You go, oh, yeah, good, I am. Oh, I'm a little, not quite. You know, but that's the whole point of it. It's not something that you need to use forever and ever, amen. And it's something that you use as a tool to get you to the place where it becomes very rote and automatic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful for this one fellow that this can be a breakthrough for him, because everything else I have tried with diet, and of course for guys, if the wife's not on board and she's doing the cooking, it's really hard.
Hard.
And that's part of the problem. But there's so many gimmicks out there, and people have tried lots of them by the time we get to them.
Yeah.
And they put a lot of money out there, so they're not really willing to do more. But I'm really finding that the stress part is equal to the bad food eating, if not even
if not more. Why do I start with it, I wonder, right?
Yes.
Because I tell people, I don't care how much good food you throw in the body, if you're doing it into this sympathetic dominant body, it's not going to digest. It's not going to get to where it needs to go. And there's so many people who are just like all stressed out and doing all the right things, but they're all stressed out about it. And then I do this and I measure that and I do, and I'm watching them going, okay, let's get you calmed down. Let's get you calmed down. So it is so super important, and anything they can do, and tools are great. And these are great, learning tools to give them feedback. And yeah, it's $100, but you know, $100 is not very much in this world, right? You can go out and go to a baseball game at night and spend more than $100. So people are used to spending that kind of money. Most people, not everybody, but so it's really a great tool to give them that feedback. And you show them and you explain to them that, you know, all this great food you're doing and all this extra money you're spending on food to support you, if it's not supporting you and you can just spend $100, you'd spend that at the grocery store in a couple of days, then it's a worthwhile endeavor. There are other tools and there are some good ones. This is one that I like. The other one my husband's been using. I got him the heart math and he did it for a while and it just wasn't as resonant for him. We got this thing called the Muse, M-U-S-E, and they now have them on Amazon. We bought it at a conference we were at, and it basically measures your brain waves. So you put this little band around your head, and it helps you to meditate. And he was trying to meditate for years, and he never could meditate. So he starts using this thing, and every morning, and he's so proud of himself. He's probably up to 175 days now that I've done it consecutively, and he keeps records. And you know, it's really good for a lot of these males that like the whole competitive thing. Like he's into competitive sports and all this stuff. And he just loves the thing and he gets on it and it tells you the number of birds you had and that's how calm you were and the number of, you know, storms you had. And it measures your brainwave. So when you go into beta, you know, that, or alpha, what is it? Alpha. You go into alpha. You know, it measures it. And when you start to think, it just triggers this sound and you immediately go back. So that's another device to keep in mind as a possibility. Now, I don't resonate as much with that as I do with the heart math. So Everybody's a little different.
But that's good to know because this guy is athletic. And maybe, you know, I mentioned the heart math and he went online and he kind of went, well, yeah, I suppose, you know, I have a cell phone, I could do it, whatever. But he wasn't excited about it. But maybe the thing about measuring brain waves, you know, in a masculine environment makes more sense to them.
Yeah. Exactly. Heart, you know, women resonate, and I don't mean to be sexist or
you know,
anything like that, but women tend to resonate with heart, and men tend to resonate with brain, and so it's just a way to do it. It's a little more expensive. It's like $250, but I think it's really worth it. And personally, for all of us, if you are seeing people in person, I think it's worth the investment to get both and just take people through sessions. And then if they really want to do it and they're resonating with it, they can buy them for themselves. And actually, if you wanted to, you know, have a little extra stream of income, you could probably do a wholesale account with them and stock them. So it's just, you know, depending on whether you have an online practice or a distance practice or an in-person. But if you're seeing these people in person, you just have him do the thing with you. You know, you have him come in for a session and you do 15 minutes of it on teaching him the whole concept and having him go through it. And you could actually have the Muse as well and then just see which resonates for different people. And you can actually charge for sessions on it. So if you have the equipment and somebody doesn't want to invest in it, you charge them for a session for you're going to take them through it and allow them to use it. So you think about ways that you can recoup your own investment in it.
Oh. Well, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about the Muse. I hadn't really researched that far into it because I like the heart math. So yeah, this opens up an entirely new area, particularly for those people, like I said, who don't do their cooking. Most of the time I get women and they're in charge of the kitchen and the buying and the groceries and the menus. And so they do that conversion. Men don't, you know, they'll eat whatever or not eat or eat too much or eat once a day or whatever. And that's so hard they aren't interested. They don't want to even go there. It's just something they do. So
sometimes it helps to get the partner in too when they're.
Sometimes that's not an option.
Sometimes it's not an option, yeah.
And then I'm also wondering, and kind of moving along with the program, and of course I know that you've always told us to personalize as to what we do, kind of running it by you, maybe I've always started with, you know, doing all the mainstays on it, all the legs, but always kind of focusing on the food because we're always so bad there and we're so uneducated about the toxins and the chemicals.
Right.
But perhaps people will be more in tune with starting with something like the stress level because we all talk about it and the doctor says, yeah, you got to reduce your stress, you know, go jog or something. If we start at that point.
Yeah.
And then
what's my first pillar? What's my first pillar?
I've been away from it for so long.
It's stress.
I've been doing my
That's
own
my
thing.
Pillar.
Nutrition
is stress
is your first
four.
One?
Nutrition is pillar four, stress, attitude, sleep, and then nutrition. And it doesn't mean you can't do them all simultaneously, and we all do, but it's just that's where I put it in the hierarchy.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like fun is last, and that's, you know, but it was just that was a fun thing to add. But yeah, stress is so important. And when I start people in my energy recharge coaching program, the first thing we give them is the 30-day stress balancing thing. And we say, okay, we want you to get started working with this. And here's something else. And we work with that before we even start. So here's my perspective. I realized this after many years of beating my head against the wall trying to get people to change their diet is like, if you have habits and you want to change them, but you don't change your attitude or your feeling about it, you're beating your head against the wall. So I talk head, heart, habits. And that's how heart method, it's the thought that triggers the emotion that then triggers the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to just change the behavior without changing the mindset or the heart or the stress level or any of that stuff, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people who are doing all the right things, but I'm not getting better and I don't like this diet after all. You know?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remembered all of them by putting it as starting with nutrition, NESS. So I had a little word to go with, but that's not how I work with it.
Yeah.
But that when it comes to my mind,
to remember, I couldn't come up with an acronym. So if anybody can come up with, you know, we were trying to, and I had come up with one called Vibrant, and it was like these jerry-rigged words. I couldn't even remember what the words were. I'm like, V, what's the V? What's the I? Like, you know, I know what the N is. Yay, I know what the N is, you know. So I canned that because I couldn't remember the acronym and what it was meant. So I just remember the pillars and the picture. I always see the picture, you know, my picture. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this goes back about the stress. I don't know if you've heard of Thomas Lodi. He's an MD in Arizona. Okay. And he does a lot of cancer stuff, natural cancer stuff. And he said, we did a 3-part interview with him on the radio show, which was great. I love that thing. I could listen to it over and over. He was so great. But he said, he sits people down the first time. He says, look, if you're not willing to work on the stress and the attitude, I can't help you with your cancer. But if you are, and he gives them this whole, he said he spends an hour and a half with them the first time talking about that. And he had this one guy, he said, was one of his, you know, classic, his prime students came to him on a gurney with 4th stage lung cancer. And they said, can you help this guy? And he's like, ugh. So he sat with the guy and he taught him, you know, and a lot of the stress stuff. And he said, we're going to be doing juice. We're going to be doing green juice. And the guy, he said he never saw this before and to such an extreme. The guy would sit there and he would caress the glass of, he would just sit there fondly looking at it and caressing it as if it was, you know, a loved one and thank it before he drank it.
Wow.
This guy, okay, 5 weeks later, he was walking himself into the clinic.
Wow.
And that's 4th stage lung cancer. So it hugely makes a difference. And I work with people who are, they're following the diet. They're following it. But they're doing it with like, it's so hard and I have to do all this work and I can't eat this and I'm afraid to eat that. And there's so much fear and so much anger and so much resentment that they can't be like the rest of the world and eat the crap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard. And they do it for a long time. But until you can get them to shift that attitude, until you can get them to calm the stress. So working on the heart and the brain waves and the connection works really well.
So I have followed Joe Dispenza and Bruce Lipton for some time and really enjoy all the information they have on all the, you know, all the things that they do in research. So is there someone else, and of course I do love the Cancer Center with Thomas Lodi. I listened to him speak on Ty Bollinger's Quest for the Cure.
Yeah.
It was excellent there too. So is there someone else that kind of has a little more in a program that you can connect with, someone that is specifically into the appreciation and gratitude that kind of coincides with the program that we have, that we work with?
Do you mean something that you could share with your clients? Like
right.
When you say a program, do you mean like audio tapes and things like that?
Well, it doesn't have to be that much. Just I just want some more information about.
So information for you, not necessarily that like tools you can share, but information to give
right.
you more tools that you can teach people.
Exactly, things that I could pass on. Right.
Yeah. Well, the Joe Dispenza stuff is good. I haven't really done much with her, but what's the name of the person? The Work is what they call it.
Oh, yeah, Byron Katie.
Byron Katie.
Yeah.
I haven't done much of her stuff, but that stuff is really excellent. Trying to think off the top of my head. If anybody else has a tool, you know, that would you want to share with Janet. I like these just because, right? There's lots of yoga things, and there's lots of different things mm-hmm. like that in meditation. But especially for the guys, number one, and especially for the busy people, they want things they can do quickly. You know, and
yes.
and this 20 minutes or, you know, he goes anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes, depending on how much he has. But Scott does this every morning. And he's like, I wouldn't say he's a new person. He's the old person again. He's the person I met 35 years ago when he
without
was
the stress.
Carefree and young and didn't have kids and a house to worry about. You know, he was, and he's become that, and he's playful and he's cute and he's funny. And he'd lost that for a while because he was so bent up in the stress, right? Oh, I dropped a glass and it broke, and he'd be upset for hours, you know what I mean? And it's
right.
made such a huge, huge difference for him, you know? And I know that that's why I think it can be helpful for the type A's. The heart mass is less so because I think it's less structured is what I think. Like with this thing, you set it up for whatever time, and it just takes you through this thing, and there's different levels. So once you pass level one, you have to get certain points, and then you go to level two. And then when you get certain points, you get to level three. And he said, well, it's not as much fun anymore because I'm at level 28 and there's no more levels.
So it
really appeals to a lot of that stuff, like the gaming. You know, when people like games and they like challenges. But I don't, you know, that's, and the Joe Dispenza, I love his meditations and stuff like that are great. Anybody else has any input, to put it in the chat and I'll read them out.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, you can actually, we have a set up so that you can, we don't have a sales page for it yet, but we have it set up so you can actually sell your client into our 30 days of stress thing. You know, those messages and all those recordings. People kept asking and asking and asking, so we set it up. And so we don't have it as a sales page. We haven't promoted it, but that's available. And you guys can sign up as affiliates and get a, whatever, 40% commission on any of them you sell, and we can set you up and give you your own link. So if that's something you're interested in, reach out and let us know, and we'll get you all set up to do that.
I'll try to.
And for all of you, you know, if there's any of our programs that you want your clients to go through or have so you can lead them through, just let us know. We'll set you up as an affiliate, and you can get a commission on it.
Okay. Great. Perfect. Okay.
All wow. right.
Got lots today.
Lots
Thank
stuff.
You.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, we have Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Dr. Anna Marie.
Hey.
Hey, I have a personal question for you.
Okay. Personal as in my personal, me personal, or personal as in you personal?
Oh, me personal. That's a good clarification, huh?
All right, good. I've had people ask me very personal questions on chats and whatnot. I'm like, what? Are you crazy? You think I'm going to answer that?
Oh, goodness. No, me personal.
Okay, good. That's easier.
This is is really interesting. I've been getting craniosacral therapy for a while now, and the therapist, when I saw her, had asked me if I had jaw pain. And I said no, and she said when she was working on certain things or doing certain things, I was grimacing. But I wasn't even aware that I was grimacing or things. And this was on a Friday, and then Sunday I'm eating dinner, and I'm eating some cauliflower, and my jaw starts hurting.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, this is really weird. So I have a friend who does rolfing, and I saw him, and he worked on my jaw and on my neck and on the he even does like inside the mouth on the pterygoid muscles and things.
Did he do that? Yeah, that's what really
he did. And my
painful
goodness,
as all get hurt. Out, right? Yeah, he wanted to bite his finger.
Yes.
And you refrained. Yes, yeah.
It's like it makes your eyes.
Yes,
tear up a little bit. But
I know I hate when I have to do that with people, and I give them all the warnings. But yeah, but it works.
Oh, it does, and I felt so much better. And there was still a lot of soreness. I saw my functional medicine doctor, and he adjusted my neck, and he did more work inside my mouth, and it got better and better. And then Saturday, so several days later, it was like gone, and it was so much better. And then what I noticed was while I'm driving now, and it was when I was driving my husband's car, I'm clenching. Because everybody was asking me if I do it at night. It's not at night. It's when I drive. And I strongly feel like it's related to the car accident that I was in July.
Yeah.
And I think it's an emotional piece of because in that accident, someone had pulled out in front of me, and I slammed on my brakes, and I hit him. And I'm, like, really fearful that because it was, I guess it was, like, just an accident that I felt very kind of,
helpless.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew it was coming, and I knew it was going to hit him, and there was nothing I could do. So I now have that realization of it's just interesting to me that this is all coming up while my car is now in the shop getting repaired.
Wow.
And I'm driving my husband's car. Isn't this crazy? It's making sense to me, though. But I was going to ask because I now I'm aware because it's coming back. Took a little break over Labor Day weekend. I wasn't driving, and then when I started driving again, it's coming back. With this emotional piece, I'm using Rescue Remedy, and I've been using my essential oils, and I put frankincense under my tongue before I drive, and I do some deep breathing and some heart math before I drive. But I was just wondering, is there anything else that you can think of? Maybe I need to start... usually I do EFT with some of the bigger things, but maybe I could just start doing like a round of tapping before I drive. I know it's related to that, and I know I get real jumpy when someone kind of starts to pull out in front of me now.
Yeah, and know that that's just your nervous system. It's a normal response, post-traumatic, you know, and we could call it PTSD. You know, that's I don't like labeling things like that, but it's not that serious. But it is that your body it's become hypervigilant because this bad thing happened and you aren't even doing anything wrong, right? And so you have this fear, and it does dissipate over time. Awareness is your first clue, your first key to changing it. You know, just as you're driving, just giving yourself that feedback, and might even be listening, not something that's going to put you to sleep, but some kind of a reminder while you're driving, like playing something that says, relax your shoulders now, and just constantly being breathing and letting go throughout, not just before, but during. And heart math is something you can do all the time, right? You can just breathe and appreciate, oh, wow, look at the flower over there. Like really start to be acutely aware of things that you can appreciate in your environment. Because what's happening is you're turning all of your attention to, of course, driving and being hypervigilant about driving and making sure nobody's, you know, going to jump you and get in your way. But also on that fear is going, so you're going right into that state. So it's like distracting. To, oh, what a pretty, you know, bumper that sticker that person has, or what a nice color that car is, and oh, what a beautiful day it is. And, oh, I feel so appreciative to be here. And when that fear comes up is, I'm so appreciative to be here. I'm just so appreciative to be healthy. I'm so, you know what I'm saying? It's like not just the before, but the during. You obviously can't tap. Oh, here's another thing that someone taught me. I learned this on the Tapping Summit probably 4 years ago, and it was a tapping thing on anxiety. And he said, you know, when you're in an anxious, anxiety-producing situation, you can't sit there in a meeting with your kid's teacher and tap your meridian points. It just looks a little odd, right? So instead, he figured out the tips of all the meridians. The starting points are all at the tips of your fingers. So he would tap with his thumb, and he would just sit with his hand in his lap, and he would just tap through. Thinking, even though whatever, even though feeling fearful about getting in, I'm really loving and appreciating. I'm really, you know, whatever your thing is, your saying is, and you can just sit there and tap the tops of his fingers, the tips of your fingers. And I taught that since I had somebody listen to that one, and it helped her a lot too. So that's something you can do even while you're driving, right? You have your hands around the wheel. It's easy to get your thumb to be able to contact your fingers. You're in that position already, right? You're in that. So that might be a thing to do.
Okay. Yes, that's very helpful.
But know that it's still, you know, you might want to rush the process, and you can speed it up to an extent, but I would also be very cognizant that it's a normal reaction, and you're doing all the right things to try to dissipate it more quickly and not let it sit in your body for 3 to 5 years later. You're finding yourself still doing it. It's so great that you became aware of this now, and just be aware and be gentle with yourself, knowing, and do all the things you can do to speed it up. But no, there's nothing, you know, inherently wrong with you that this is happening. This is just normal post-trauma.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. 'Cause I feel like I'm a sensitive person anyway.
Yeah, you are.
Like, I think my nervous is a little bit sensitive. And then this, I was like, whew, okay, how can we help ourselves?
Yes, yes. So, yes, you are definitely sensitive. And that's what I think happens with you when you're with clients, right? You pick up their energies, and, you know, you just got to learn to separate you from out there. You know, what's happening out there is not going to impact you. Not that you can't be aware. It's great that you're aware, because somebody else might just be having this jaw pain and going around and thinking they have a whole new problem, right? But you're sensitive enough and intuitive enough to have connected the dots and then made the connection. And this is something that we, as practitioners, we become good detectives. And so you're an amazing detective, right? So you do the same thing on yourself as you would do with people. Like, oh, they have this symptom, and they're just thinking this and that, and then you suddenly, and they go, oh, and you put it together for them. So you're just using your skills, your very fine-tuned skill set to figure it out, and now it's just a matter of being gentle with yourself and doing everything you can.
Yes, yeah, it's so funny you say that, Dr. Rita Marie, because even I'm still working on the techniques that Jane gave me and still working on grounding myself. But, like, even last night, my husband and I were at a dinner, and there was a person kind of a few tables away. And I'm the type of person that can hear everything, and I'm not even trying to listen to other people's conversations, but I could, like, hear everything this guy was saying. And he was just stuck in this story, and he's just telling it over and over again. And I'm a cold-natured person all the time, and I just felt like my whole body got hot. Like I have a fever hot, and Mark is like,
oh, wow.
What's wrong? And I was like, I'm like picking up some stuff, and I'm trying to like turn it off. And I was like, feel my forehead. And Mark, he was like, oh my gosh, Lord. And I was like, I know. And it was, so I had to get Mark to, I was like, okay, tell me a story. Like, and it worked. Like, he kind of distressed me, and it's just weird stuff that's happening. I'm just kind of learning as I go along, but I do feel like it's so interesting, Dr. Emery, because I feel like this is part of my healing too, is learning how to be aware of this and not try to turn it off, but just try to kind of be open and feel it out. But,
and protect.
So
it's not a matter of turning it off. No, you're not. You're just sensitive. And this is what I see this all the time. And I have to work to tune into that sensitivity, because I learned early on to protect myself from it, but it started to become really clear as I started to work with people, you know, whatever number of decades ago, and I'd start to work mm-hmm. with people and start to feel things in my own body, and I wasn't as educated about that piece of it, right? And I started to really explore and see that, oh, that's not my neck pain. Maybe that's the spot on them that's crying out, and I'd go there, and sure enough, or I'd be guided mm-hmm. to stick a needle into a point, and I'd go, I don't even remember what the hell that point was. What does that do? But that's where I stuck the needle, and I went back, and I'd pull out my charts because I was all paranoid that I did something wrong. And like, sure enough, it was, you know, just the right point. And so we have to start to really learn to trust that intuition, but also keep, I don't want to say a distance from it, but like Jane had said, you want to just make sure that you're not letting their energy in. So mm-hmm. it's not going to, it allows you to pick up on what they're feeling and be able to be compassionate with them, but you don't want to take it in. And so the more awareness you have, you're aware of that, the more you can use techniques to say, okay, that's his, that's not mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we going to get to talk about some of this in the energy medicine
stuff? Yeah.
Like later?
Oh, yeah.
In the,
yeah.
Because
oh,
this
yeah.
stuff fascinates me
yeah.
so much. And I feel like it's so critical. I love what you're doing in this program because I feel like you need both. Like you need the yeah. knowledge, you need that foundation, you need that information. But I'm finding I also have to tune into that intuition too. It's
absolutely.
Like you have to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. So.
There was a discussion happening, and I don't remember. It was a few years back, and it was on either a summit or a debate or whatever, and these practitioners were talking about which is more important, the knowledge or the intuition. But if you're an intuitive and you can really heal people because you have an intuitive hit. And then the other person said, you know, knowledge is basically food for intuition. Because if you don't have the knowledge of how something is working and laid out and flows, you're going to get these vague hits that there's something going on in a particular area. But you might not be able to do much with it unless you understand the underlying biochemistry, physiology, and et cetera. And when you have the both, it's an amazingly powerful tool. I mean, I find myself, I've had to let it go because I'm very left brain, as you guys can tell by the materials I put out, but also very right brain, as you can tell by this discussion, right? So mm-hmm. when I was able to actually integrate them, I feel like it's the best. So if I'm sitting with somebody and I've got this plan and I'm going to go through their labs and I'm going to explain to them all the stuff that's going on and we start just talking, sometimes we may not get to the lab. Because something's mm-hmm. come up that I have to deal with them that is going to prevent them from being able to do anything with the results of that lab. And it's when you can tune into that, that makes a huge difference. I don't know if you were following a discussion that Michaeline put up on the INE group. And if you have, I think you might have responded to it. But she put it up on the INE Facebook group about something that came up for her. And Michaeline, for those of you who don't know Michaeline, she's extremely left-brained. She's extremely logical, extremely, amazingly brilliant. And she has also got this emotional, intuitive side. And she normally stays very focused. And she had something came up in one of her talks with somebody who she said, you know, she addressed this emotional thing and the person pulled back, but then she was able to rectify it. But it's like she, and the person actually came back to her and said, I think this is the key. This is going to be key to my healing in order to be able to address this. So stay there, you know, but go in with an agenda of what you're going to work with somebody on, but be willing to address some of these things as they come up. And be willing to gently call them on it. I think you had an experience ago you talked about last time where it got a little edgy because of the other practitioner that was in there and kind of, you know, but learning not to blurt out your intuition, right? But to explore it gently with them, right? Because you can push them back too far if you go there too quickly, you know.
That was such a learning experience for me because I just asked, you know, what are you doing to find fun in life? And she completely shut down.
Yeah.
And then, the psychologist got mad
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah. Uh-oh, you've hit on it. And you know when they shut down, when you address something emotionally and they shut down, you've hit the nail on the head. So anyway, so I'm going to move on because we have two other questions, but it's always a great discussion with you, Laura. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You're welcome. And Thompson, Jay Thompson in Boston. Who's that?
That's me, Susan.
Oh, that is Susan. I was, you know, I don't know why I was thinking Susan earlier, but I was reading Washington and Massachusetts. I don't know why I was reading Washington. I don't know. I was confused.
Well, you said Lowell, actually. You said
that's
Lowell.
That's why I thought Lowell. Yes, that was who I thought was, okay, got it. I was, The thing drives me nuts because it doesn't give you the actual name. I like our NEPT calls on Maestro where we actually I actually have your names and I know who you really are. I don't have to guess and remember and play this game of recognition. Anyway, hi, Susan.
Hi. Oh, listen, I wrote a question just because there was some detail in there. I'm wondering if you're able to read it because I don't want to take up too much time.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it accessible to you?
On the chat or on the Q&A?
Yeah,
it's
Q&A.
Yeah. Okay, so it says a low C384C411 plus positive ANA. IFA. Okay, remind me some of these. I don't know or remember what the range is on C4. So
okay, so the range on C4 in this particular case is 16 to 47, so it's at 11. And then on the C3, the range is 90 to 180, and the number is 84.
Okay, so that's a little closer to the range. Okay, and then positive ANA, and then so the ANA is, 180 is not super high
not
for
that.
I've seen them. Yeah, it's not bad. IFA, remind me what that is.
That's the ANA IFA screen with reflex to titer and pattern IFA.
Got it. Okay, got it. ANA IFA. Okay, got it. Okay. I don't, some of the stuff I don't run all that often. I just recognize when I get those immune panels done. DNA antibody is normal. SLC70 antibody 1.5 positive. Where would you go with testing from here to get a better understanding of what's going on? So clearly there's an autoimmune process going on. There's an inflammatory process going on. And the immune system is not able to really handle it. So I don't know, I would start with, before going into what other testing to do, I might be looking at, like, what's the rest of the environment looking like? What's the diet look like? What's the environment? What are some environmental exposures? What's the gut looking like? Because there's always, almost always, I could say 99% of the time, there's going to be a leaky gut component with an autoimmune disease. If there's not, then there's probably going to be some kind of heavy metal toxicity or liver dysfunction or something like that. There's going to be something that's triggering it. So I would be looking at the gut. I would certainly look at the diet and start with a low antigen diet. So taking them off of all the top, gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and then anything else that you suspect with them and sugar and in the inflammatory foods. So you want to really calm down. You don't want to fire, fuel that can create this issue. Finding specific food triggers can be very important because some people have different food triggers that trigger their autoimmunity and looking at the gut. So if you wanted to look at the gut, you could certainly look at the gut, but it's always like, it depends on where they're at. If this person comes in and they're eating a pristine diet and they've been working on this for a long time, I'd also want to look at fatty acids. What's the fatty acid balance? Because that's inflammatory as well. Other immune markers, you can get into the interleukins, the cytokines, the interleukin IL-16 and all that, but I don't generally do that initially. And symptomatically, is this person symptomatic or is this person just?
Yeah, so actually the person is me.
Okay.
And so I'm pretty much gluten-free. The odd time I'll have some gluten. I'd say I have a
100%. 100%. Okay. When you're dealing with autoimmunity. Because here's the deal, Susan. Every time you have gluten, it fires up the immune system again.
Yeah.
And you have the potential for taking 3 to 6 months for it to go down. So I would pristine about gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts at least for a month to get the calm down. But with gluten, it's got to be way longer than that. And then you can figure out what's going on in there. I would look at your fatty acids.
Okay.
For sure. What other symptoms are you experiencing?
Well, you know, this all came about when I had told my functional doctor that I had some pain at the top of my sternum and on the left side of my rib cage. And, you know, I thought maybe it was from too much back bending, this sort of thing. So at that particular point, because I also have Hashimoto's, I don't have antibodies that are off the charts, but they're at about 22. They range anywhere from 35 down to 14. So they sort of move in and out of that range. And even the C3 and C4 numbers aren't astronomically out of whack, but certainly enough for me to say, oh, okay. And then the scleroderma thing was really something that threw both of us off, because I don't really have any type of symptoms on my skin that indicate scleroderma. Yeah. So there's just been some, you know, a little bit of pulling here and there that just feels a little bit odd, and that's really been about it.
Yeah. No, this is good, because here's the thing. Not that it's good that you have all this stuff, but here's the thing, that a lot of times people have antibodies long before they have symptoms.
Uh-huh.
And they, like the Cyrex 5, I think it is, or A5, does a screening of probably 35 different autoantibodies. And if wouldn't you like to get that warning sign that there's bullets being shot at your body parts before you have symptoms? So, and you know, if you really were to look with scleroderma, maybe you'd see that you have some tightening of skin somewhere, or, you know, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it's low enough that it's not really symptomatic yet. I have seen people with huge numbers of thyroid antibodies that all the other thyroid numbers were normal, you know, like 200, 500. 700s with a TSH of 1.5, and their doctor would never have even bothered to look. So if the earlier you can get it, so really taking this seriously, you've got indications of right here three autoimmune processes, right? There's bound to possibly more. There may be antibodies that are hitting your brain right now. You don't want to lose your brain, right? They may be hitting your heart. You don't want to lose your heart, right? Your collagen tissue, right? Hang one second. I need to say goodbye to my son who's leaving for the weekend. Give me a second.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
Yeah, so for you, it's getting seriously about an autoimmune protocol. And the more you get serious about it for yourself, the more you're going to be able to be emphatic about coaching your clients with this, because this is not something to fool with, Susan. I don't want to sugarcoat this, and I also don't want to create cedar, because that doesn't help either, but I don't want to sugarcoat this. You got to get serious about this. Occasional gluten is not okay. I would definitely do your fatty acids. I would look at, you know, B vitamin status, looking at supporting your system in every way possible, an anti-inflammatory diet, alkaline-forming diet, measure your pH, see where your pH is at. That's the stuff that I would do with this.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk to you frankly. If you were talking with a patient, you may want to be going slowly, and, you know, but there's times, you know, I'll tell people, I'll help you ease into this diet lifestyle change. Unless you got bloody cancer or autoimmune disease. And who wants to go slowly, right? Who wants to go slowly with that? You just want to do it. You want to get this change before it becomes so out of control that it's hard to deal with. You've got minor antibody elevations, right? Catch it now before it becomes too serious.
Okay. And, you know, I did do 23andMe and ran it through Genetic Genie, and I'm going to run it through Ben Lynch's site as well. And uploaded for the next call that we do, I guess it's next month, to see what your thoughts are on that, because there's definitely more insight there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and because they have that whole section on autoimmune markers and all that. What was your gluten markers like? What were they like?
There weren't any gluten markers.
And you ran it through, wait, did you run it through?
Oh, this was actually run through Quest Diagnostics through my doctor here in Boston.
This was, no, I would, no, not gluten markers here, but I'm talking about on your, run it through also, yeah, I would also run it through the MTHFRsupport.com. Because they'll give you, you know, pages after pages. They don't give you good explanations like Ben does, but it, it covers a lot more, and you can actually see all the immune markers there as well.
Okay.
And you can
okay,
see whether you've got those particular markers, the IgAs and Eps and D, you know, HLAs and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so that would probably be the document that would be well worthwhile uploading for the call next month then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd upload that.
Wonderful.
I'd upload your, also upload the Genetic Genie ones, and upload the Ben Lynch one. Cause I'm, here's my feeling, and I wrote this in our newsletter a couple of weeks ago, our NEPT newsletter. So those of you who are not in NEPT, you didn't get it, but, where I went through, and I actually showed, I shared mine. I said, okay, here's what I, here's an example, but I talked about how it would be really helpful for you to be able to help patients is to just get your 23andMe done and then run all of the filters that I mentioned in there. I think I mentioned, Genetic Genie and then MTHFR support, metabolic healing and the Ben Lynch, because you get different insights on all of it.
Okay.
When you run it on yourself, you get this broad picture, and I'll show you when we do that call how to look at the 49 pages is a bit ridiculous, but how to how to pick the ones out of there that are really telling, especially in either autoimmunity or thyroid disease and whatnot. And that's the part that Stratagene from Ben Lynch doesn't. He's really strictly sticks with the methylation ones and a few extras. He has a few what he calls bonus SNPs. But the other one goes through it. They just don't give as beautiful an explanation as he does.
Right. Fair enough.
Right?
Okay. Thank you for your help.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Eleanor, hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. We've missed you over the last few months.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back into the swing of it. So I've been listening to some calls, and the reason why I called it today, and I don't know if this is the right call to do this, but I wanted to talk about Dr. Rosensweet, his call.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What did you think of that? I was interested in him, but it seems like his philosophy is that every woman needs to be on hormones or...
Okay. So here's my philosophy.
It's going to fall apart.
There's a lot of people out there. I don't agree 100% with all of them, but with everything that they say, but I learn a lot. So I don't really agree with that philosophy. I mean, he may prove me otherwise. Because when he said, well, show me somebody who's this age and doesn't have... I'm like, oh, you're talking to one. You know,
yeah.
Right. So, I don't know that that's... You know, I think that there's a lot of stuff that leads up. That said, though, most people, when they get to menopausal time of their life, and especially the ones we're seeing, they've been abusing themselves for a long time. And it could be very helpful to get them on. But, of course, I like to go through the rest of it. But, yeah, if you can get somebody out of those horrible, horrific symptoms that they're having and go straight to the bioidenticals while you're working on fixing the underlying terrain, I'm all for it, right? I always say Band-Aids are great as long as you're working on the underlying brokenness. But if you just put the Band-Aid on and you don't work on, well, why are they out of balance? Why are their hormones out of balance? What are the mechanisms for that getting there? What's their adrenals like? What are their digestion? And he talked about all that, so I agreed with that. So I don't necessarily agree that every woman needs it. And like I said, maybe there will be some evidence someday that that's true. But I do believe that a lot of the people we do see could benefit from it if they're in those, you know, in that stage where you're not getting them relief. It's going to go slow to get them relief by fixing their digestion and fixing their adrenals. And if you can get them relief by getting in and balancing their hormones right from the start, and then they're more motivated to work with you.
So what if you have someone that they're not really off the charts because of menopause. They've been through it without the hot flashes, without all this stuff, but they've got things like hair loss and maybe low libido. Would you think he would be someone that would be worth seeing, or is he going to put them to...
Well, he will put them on hormones. So, you know, if there's any imbalance, he will put them on that. So, but if you're working on all the rest, like they've gotten off all the allergens and they're getting their immune system under control and they're doing anti-inflammatory and their other hormones, you know, hair loss can be related to adrenals and thyroid. So, and I think that adrenal issues usually precede female hormone issues. So that's just my take on it. So if you've gotten to a point where you're like hitting your head against the wall, they've done as much as they're willing to do, then certainly have them, you know, get some hormones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it that he has some, I know he talked about this whole.
The target method he teaches.
Yeah, that it's risk adjusted. And is he using some kind of special hormones?
Uses the hormones in teeny tiny doses. So he actually, I loved his method. He actually gives them their stuff and he teaches them to titrate up until they get results. So he doesn't want to go past the point where they get the results. But again, look at this. Look at it this way. If you've got someone who is completely asymptomatic, his method won't work, right? So they're already titrated to the dose they need. Zero. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's where I saw a little bit of the flaw there. But most people are not completely asymptomatic. And you can do it. Now, I'm going to sign up for his course. I just haven't had time. And he offered us a great discount on it. So if anybody's interested in learning from him, it's a very inexpensive course. It's like $395 or something full price. And I don't know what he'd give us as a discount. So I've got to, you know, maybe Lynn, you can make a note that we should put it out to the NEPT group that anybody would be interested in. And I'm sure he would open it up to the whole INE group as well, that if we want to get a discount on that, let's try to coordinate with him and see who wants to do it. Because it's a good educational piece, right? You may not have the license to do it, but you want to be able to know enough about it so that if you are referring somebody out, that you know, like Susan was on last week and she came on that call. And when she showed me what her doctor had put her on, I was like through the roof. And he was the same way because it's like this is completely irresponsible, I think, to put people on some of these hormones that way without proper testing and, you know, et cetera. So there's a lot of them out there. So the more we know about it, the more we can guide people, because inevitably people are going to come in and say they're already on bioidenticals or they're thinking about going on bioidenticals.
Right. That's really what I get more. What they ask me, what do you think about the hormones? And I always like go to the big hormone picture when they're just really talking about the sex hormones.
And they're just talking about the sex hormones.
The
female
hormones, right?
Right.
And so
but
I really don't,
I
don't feel comfortable having the discussion with them because I'm afraid of them, right? And, but for some people, they probably are the right thing. But
absolutely.
Again, he sounds like he doesn't really test you. He just puts you on it right away. I mean, that was
he does that right away. So if somebody's showing a symptom picture, he's been doing it long enough that he will put them on. And again, he does it with the teeny tiny doses. He doesn't use oral estrogens. He doesn't use oral testosterone. He starts with just the basics. If he thinks testosterone, usually just starts with estrogen, progesterone. He doesn't use unopposed estrogen. He does biased, which has, you know, 80% is estriol, which is protective. So I agree with him that the health thing that made everybody stop using the hormones was because of the hormones they were using. They were not using estriol. They were using Premarin, and they were using not progesterone, natural bioidentical, but they were using progestins, which in and of themselves, you just take those, you're going to have a risk of cancer. So it wasn't that if you're replacing hormones that person normally would make but isn't, and getting it to the physiologic level, not to, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say, restore your periods and your youthful glow. Like, yeah, really. That's not good.
That's not what we want always.
We want to get the normal levels that are right for menopause so we don't break bones, so we don't have a risk of cardiac disease, so that, you know, we're not all dry and shriveled up, you know, and can't have sex. But we don't want to get to the point where we can have babies again. That's ridiculous.
Right.
So that's anti-nature. So I'm totally for working with nature, and I think you agree. We want to work with nature, same way that we would help somebody, you know, if we're working on their adrenals. You know, give them a little DHEA pregnenolone just to get them started. That's not long-term. That's just to get them out of the hump to speed up the process. Those are hormones. Those are bioidenticals. Fortunately, those are available over the counter. the estrogen progesterones aren't. Although there are some, you know, people, Bezweckin and a couple of others, that actually include some progesterones available. So it's really just estrogen and testosterone that's not available except by prescription. So if it's done right, I think it's great. And I think we all should learn from what he's learned. We have the reproductive module we'll teach in NEPT, but I don't have the experience of doing bioidenticals the way he has. Why not learn it from that perspective? So we'll find out more about that, and we'll put out an email to let everybody know. But
okay,
it's a good question, because I didn't agree with that, and I just didn't want to go there, right? Like,
right.
I've never had I don't even know what a hot flash feels like, and I'm 60 years old. Like, I never got cranky or irritable. I actually got more powerful after menopause. I got more confident after menopause. It wasn't that horrible transition for me. But I'd been taking care of myself for 25 years before that.
Right, which is why, you know, you hear about the Japanese and all the different women that don't have it.
They don't have it. They don't even know what it is. What's menopause?
Right, but still there are certain things that happen to, even for women that have that kind of experience, they might still have vaginal dryness, or they might still be losing their hair, and so it's,
exactly.
You know.
And they're subtle symptoms. So if there are some symptoms that are indicative of the hormones being out of balance, then, and I might actually want to confirm that. It depends on the person, you know, but if their only symptom is vaginal dryness, then it's like, well, that could be, let's just go test and see before jumping them on hormones.
Yeah, yeah. That was the one thing, that the hormone, every woman had to be on it forever, and the fact that he doesn't test made me nervous, those two
things.
Well,
he does test after 3 months, but he doesn't test initially if he can tell by symptoms, and there are cases when he will test.
Okay, okay.
So if they're already on hormones, he's testing. If they're already on hormones from someone else, he's testing for sure.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, other thing is, you know, like vaginal dryness, for example, there's DHEA, vaginal DHEA can reverse dryness. So was that an estrogen problem? Or was it a DHEA, was it an adrenal problem, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
Right, that's right, right there, yeah. That's one of the things that makes me wonder if it's really more focused on adrenals than the female hormones. Yeah. Okay.
You know, and again, it depends on, like I answered Eric when he asked a question earlier, it's like, depends. It depends on the person and how they present. And if somebody has vaginal dryness and they're like raging and they're, you know, they're at risk of losing their job and their family and all this, you don't want to sit there and work on their adrenals and their gut. You want to work on those, of course, but you need to get them symptom relief right away. And how do we do that? So Band-Aids are great as long as we're working on fixing the underlying.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for discussing that with me.
You're welcome. No problem.
Okay.
I'm going to go to the chat. Bye. I'm going to go to the chat and see if anybody's typed in. And let me see if there's any more questions in Q&A. Yes, Luz. Luz is Luz. Can progesterone cause symptoms like anxiety and nervousness? Yeah, like excess progesterone can. And actually, you know, when you look at PMS, right, PMSD would be like where there's more depression and anxiety symptoms, and that can actually be caused by an excess of progesterone. So we really need to, you know, working with hormones, you got to go very gently and very slowly. And most people will say, oh, yeah, progesterone cream, let's prescribe some progesterone cream for that. And it works wonderfully for a lot of things. But instead of just saying, you know, go use the dose that's on the bottle, like learning from what Dr. Rosensweet said on our call last week, was basically that you start with the tiny, tiny, a little dollop on their wrist and just see how they respond. Oh, they respond good. Go a little bit more. Because everybody responds differently. And that's why when I work with supplements, I much prefer liquid supplements and powdered supplements, because you can titrate dose. I much prefer single things initially, at least, to just see how people respond to it and then be able to create a formulation. You know, in Chinese medicine, they use a lot of other indicators, and they create custom formulas for each person. Now, you know, they don't do it to the point of each individual thing, but they're using some indicators in the body, you know, specific, you know, the pulses and the tongues and all that. I think we can do that to an extent where we can help people to get very little amounts. So, yes, progesterone can cause those symptoms, and it may be that the person's taking too much, or it may be that they don't need it. So I would back it off and just start tiny little bit more. And when you get to like a quarter teaspoon and you say, oh, well, they started to get anxious, you back it off. Same thing we do with vitamin C and magnesium and some other nutrients where you can actually get bowel tolerance. You titrate up, you start to get hit bowel tolerance, you titrate back down. So, you know, it's individual. Would a 200-pound woman need the same amount of a supplement or progesterone as a 100-pound woman? I mean, unlikely, right? And we do this with kid doses. We say the kid dose should be this, and based on weight, we should do that with adults too, because there's a wide variety of weights and other things. So chat, let's see. Anything going on here? I guess Lynn posted a couple of links to Open Mind Training Institute and Wise Mind, Open Finding Purpose. So I guess that was in response to Janet. Melody, from last night's case study, there's a master tracker available for all our patients' clients. I mean, for us to upload once they give us a copy of their labs. You can use it with all of your patients and clients. I prefer you don't give it to them to use, because it is our proprietary stuff. You know, I prefer that you keep track of it in there, because it's, you know, I've taken many, 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 many years to create that, and I don't want it to be a publicly accessible form. But you can use it with all your clients. Okay, let's see. Valerie purchased the Target Method course. We signed up under the NP practitioner, which costs $180. With the discount he offered us, it's $108. There you go, Valerie. Yay! That's a deal, a steal. We have all the links and discount codes in the NEPT practitioner's Facebook group. Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, that's fine, Melody. Totally fine. Yeah. It's a little overwhelming for them to use themselves. I've been trying to get people to use it, but it's really hard. And for those of you who are not in NEPT and like IRSPT and CMDS, we have within NEPT for our certification students, we have this amazing, what we call the Master Health Tracker. And it has all these different tabs where you can just keep track of everything. And we went through it last night on a call, and it was really very helpful. Okay, so let's see. No other questions. Hands up. Any more questions? Otherwise, we'll call it a day. Star 2. Fantastic. All right. It was great talking to you guys. Love these calls. It's so fun, and I love the interaction. And I'm going to put it on interactive. So bye. Bye-bye.
She didn't answer everybody's questions.
Were there more questions? Did somebody still have another question? I heard just somebody say she didn't answer everybody's questions. Did I miss any? Yeah, Grace.
Okay.
Let me put you back on lecture. Hi, Grace.
Hi. I put two questions in the INE Ask the Doctor.
Oh, Lynn said she looked there and didn't see any, so let me go there. I will go there.
Okay. I think you answered one of them already.
Okay. Let me find my link. Okay. So my site.
It might not have been in the INE, open office hours. That's all I looked at.
Well, I don't know. That's what it says, but maybe I put it in the wrong place.
Okay. Let me look. No problem. Center support, and it's INE. Office hours, let's see. And I can look at it. Maybe you put it under IRSPT. I don't know if there was one there, but Grace, yeah, Grace, September 8th.
That's me.
That's you. Yeah, there's two questions there. Okay, so September 8th, I was tired and went to bed at 9:30. Tossed, turned, and ended up getting up and didn't sleep till 3:30 this morning, and then awakened at 6:15. Holy cow. Because I have the B12 folate SNP, I stopped that, and I'm doing the B- and the liquid B12 folate. I took them yesterday, even cutting back on the dose, and ended up not being able to fall asleep. any thoughts, and do you think the hydroxy would be valid? Yeah, so you had been taking, you mean, that you had been taking methylated B12 and folate?
Well, on the last month, you suggested that I do the B- and the liquid thing from Ben Lynch, the Seeking Health one. So I got that, and I started doing it, but I thought, well, I'm taking too big a dose because I was having trouble. Yeah. So I cut way back, but somehow every time I take it, I end up in this place.
You end up in that place. And so it sounds like you're over methylate or you're getting a methyl backup there. So what I would say is, how much were you taking when you backed off? Are you taking them individually, the B12 separate from the folate?
No, they come in the little bottle, you know, with the dropper. And instead of taking the dose that's recommended, I'm taking I started out with 2 drops and then I went to 4 and then I gradually increased till I got to 10. So I'm thinking, well, maybe 10 is way too much.
10 is too much. Yeah. So you had 10 yesterday when you tossed and turned?
Yeah.
I would start with the 2 if that worked. Just stick with that for 3 or 4 days. Everything's okay. Go to 3 and I would 1 drop titrate, even if it takes you 5 weeks to get there and get to the point where you're at your tolerance. Now, then what you want to do is look to see how much B12 and folate am I actually getting there. If you have the combination one, I think it's high in B12, but has just a little pinch of folate. Doesn't have much folate. So it depends. I don't remember. Did you have homozygous MTHFR?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And COMTs and all that. Yeah. So probably, what I would do is use what you have. Just go very slightly. Now, the max you could take on the B12 is 4 drops before you get, you know, this tossing and turning, then stick with the 4 drops. Maybe a few months you can take a little more. Stick with the 4 drops and get either the hydroxy or the adenosyl and C.
Okay.
Because if it's only 4 drops, it's probably you're only getting 200 micrograms or something. Because I think each drop on the B12 is I can't remember the dose exactly, but I know it's really small, 40 or 50 micrograms per drop.
Uh-huh.
Right. So if you get to a point where you're taking it and you're going, wow, that's a really low dose, I think I need more. But calculate the folate as well. And if the folate is super low and you've got the homozygous, then also get yourself a bottle of the liposomal folate separate.
Okay. Okay. I can do that.
Okay.
And then below that is another question on something.
I'm going to do a lab test for Hashimoto's. They always test for the TPO antibody. Do you recommend testing for the TG? Oh, that's great. So if your TPO is positive, then I don't think you need to test for the TG unless you just want to use it as monitoring purposes. But if your TPO is negative and you're suspicious that there's an autoimmunity, I would definitely do the thyroglobulin. Because I've seen people who have 0 TPO, but their thyroglobulin is through the roof.
Uh-huh.
And vice versa. So, I mean, the ideal is to do both of them, but if it's a cost thing, then I usually say start with TPO because 80% of people with Hashimoto's will have TPO. But if it comes back negative, I'm going to want you to do the thyroglobulin anyway.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Reverse T3, you know, I don't do reverse T3 all that much because it is a little bit pricey, but I do it when I'm not seeing response. So usually I kind of guess at the reverse T3. So if somebody has a really good hefty level of T4 and their free T3 is low, then I'm suspicious that their reverse T3 is high because most likely it is. Right? So we do things to help the conversion, which is support the liver, support the gut, selenium, make sure iodine status is good, B vitamins and all that. De-stress, because that's a biggie piece, address adrenals and stress. And if we're still not getting results and, you know, they're still having symptoms even though their T3 is in the normal range, above 3 for a free T3, then I might do reverse T3. I don't do it that often.
Okay.
Yeah. I try to save people from having too many tests. But, you know, clearly a comprehensive and somebody's been struggling with it for a really long time, then I'd probably do it. When would be appropriate for menopausal women in stage 3 adrenal fatigue and low sex hormones? Oh, we just had that discussion.
Yeah, you answered that.
Yes.
But my last question is about what blood markers would you do for kidney function?
Oh, kidney function, BUN, creatinine, uric acid. And then I would also do protein, globulin, and albumin.
Okay.
And if you go any of the labs, if you just say you want a kidney function panel, they know what to put in there.
Okay. Okay, cool.
All right.
Well, see you at Shine.
See you at Shine. Yeah, you're going to be there. I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yay. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Anybody else? It looks like we got last chance, star two. All right. All right, everybody. Bye now. Have a great day.